crushed by the idea that many of the older people really, I didn't think that they really understood what we were asking them or how to respond to surveys. So that's where my interest started. And then I've done some quantitative data with these instruments and analyzing differences in people who respond in English and Spanish. And we got that over half of one of the instruments, people respond differently if they choose to respond in English or Spanish. So then to understand that better, we moved into doing some qualitative data. And this is what I'm presenting today. So we're going to do readability and comprehension of two widely used surveys that measure important domains of the elderly. One is depression, and the other one is physical function. So in brief, I'm going to give a short background and objective of the study. The methods we used, report some of the results, and then our conclusions and how we move forward. So the number of people over the age of 65 is growing, and the percent of minorities within that group is also increasing, projecting it to become 28% by the year 2030, up from 17% in the year 2002. Of these minority elders, those who live in poverty comprise 68% of all the minority elderly, which is a huge number. In general, these people who live in poverty have lower levels of education, have less access to health care, and we have a harder time measuring their outcomes. So patient-reported information, which is reported usually with surveys, is an essential component of the total health evaluation of a population. But if we use these surveys, their data that we collect is only valid if people understand what they're being asked. So two important aspects of health for the elderly are depression, depressive symptoms, and physical function. And two commonly used surveys to measure these domains are the geriatric depression scale and the PROMIS, which is patient-reported outcomes measurement information system, physical functioning scale. And there's little information about how well these measures are understood by minority elders. So a brief background of these scales. The geriatric depression scale has been widely used and has extensive data reporting its validity and reliability. It has 30 questions, items, each one with two response options, yes, no. And an example of one of its questions is, do you feel happy most of the time? Yes or no? The PROMIS physical functioning item bank is a relatively newer instrument, but it has been developed using state-of-the-science IRT methods, which enhance precision and also makes it easier to more efficient to administer because people have to respond to less items in general to get a more precise score. This item bank has 124 items, each one with five response options. And an example of an item is, are you able to do chores such as vacuuming or yard work? And the response options are without any difficulty, with a little difficulty, with some difficulty, with much difficulty, or unable to do. So the objective then of this study was to evaluate how well understood these two survey measures are by African American and Latino elders. So to accomplish this, we did two things. We did readability analysis to evaluate the items, how hard it is to understand and comprehend what they say, and then cognitive interviews to better understand what are people understanding with each one of these items. So readability analysis, most formulas are based on two significant predictors. One is the sentence length, the amount of words per sentence, and the other one is the average number of syllables per word. The Flesch-Kincaid is one of the most widely used, And the score yields a number that represents the number of formal years of schooling that are necessary to appropriately understand written text. U.S. norms in general recommend that written text for the general population do not exceed 7th grade for the normal population and does not exceed 5th grade when you're working with vulnerable populations. So clearly my population is vulnerable, so we shouldn't exceed 5th grade. Then we did 30 cognitive interviews with people who, from senior centers and community organizations in 3 locations in South and East Los Angeles. The mean age was 76, with a range of 65 to 92. 60% were female, 37% had 6 or less years of formal education, 17 could not read one or both questionnaires. 30 is a good number to reach saturation based on previous qualitative data research, that after 30 you don't get too much more relevant data. And retrospective probes in random order were done after each person responded to each questionnaire. Some people responded first to the depression and some first to the physical functions. And right after they had completed the questionnaire, we had guides with probes to better understand how they had responded and what exactly they understood with each question. So moving to results. First, the readability. I have in the x-axis all the items for the geriatric depression scale, this 30. The y-axis is the number of years of formal education that are needed to appropriately understand each item. So the range of the first, we have that 9 items scored, the blue line, sorry, is the 5th grade, the threshold that we are setting for this population, that items should not exceed 5th grade. And we see that 9 items, 30% of them are reporting higher readability than the recommended 5th grade.
So if I answer that question, it would be no, because I'm clearer
than
I was before. So.
Yeah, so the range and the easiest question, is your mind as... Oh, that's what, I didn't know what you were talking about. Yeah. Is your mind as clear as it used to be?
It's clear.
Yeah, well, the answer no. The first thing you put up there is, are you happy most of the time? And someone could say, no, I'm happy all the time.
Well, yeah. So the readability for that one is 0.1. And the highest readability is 7.6, so that item requires 7 years of formal schooling, almost 8. Do you have trouble concentrating? Moving to the physical function readability, we have 7 items that score higher, which is 23% higher than the recommended 5th grade. The range is from 0.6. Are you able to wash your back? To 12, does your health now limit you in doing vigorous activities such as running, lifting heavy objects, participating in strenuous sports? I don't know why that got cut. So that one is the highest, and it has a 12.0 readability. So a little note on the scores and missing data when we administered these. The mean score for the geriatric depression scale was 6.1, which falls in the normal range with a range of 0 to 22. We had 24 people who ranged normal, 5 were in mild depressive symptoms, and 1 was in severe depressive symptoms.
So we always had a question about the problem with downhearted and blue.
I know.
How do we interpret that and translate that in Spanish? Mi corazón está bajo y estoy azul.
No, you can't do it. Right.
Well, how is it? How
it is interesting, though, that the person that was severely depressed, 1 score, mm-hmm. was one person that recommended that we should. There were 2 people, actually, that recommended that this questionnaire.
What's the Spanish translation for that?
Let me see if I have it here, if not, I'll give it to you after. Okay, I have it in my computer.
That's a good example of how we use colloquialism in English.
Yeah.
And we assume that even in English people understand it.
Yeah.
That was an SF-36 item, too.
And
that version was used
yes.
in the version 1. It got dropped in version 2 for that reason. Blue wasn't used anymore because of that problem.
I want to share an example of the translation of Out of Sight, Out of Mind. It was translated into Japanese, this is for real, as blind and crazy. And it's just
wow.
People are now doing more contextual translation than literal.
Yeah.
That's changed.
What about emojis? We just use faces.
Oh, I love emojis.
We can just use faces now.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give it to you after. So 14% of all possible responses were missing, and the three items with most missing data were: do you feel full of energy? Do you often feel downhearted and blue? And do you often get restless and fidgety? For the physical function data, the mean score was 40. This is in a normal distribution where 50 is the average of the population. So, and higher scores are better physical function. So clearly this is a population with limitations in physical function. The range was 25 to 63. 13% of all possible responses were missing, and the three items with most missing data were: does your health now limit you in doing vigorous activities such as running, lifting heavy objects, participating in strenuous sports? Does your health now limit you in bending, kneeling, or stooping? And does your health now limit you in walking more than a mile?
So you didn't ask people, though, why they left it missing, right? They weren't set up to do that.
No. But the first one is the one with the highest readability score, which is... So analyzing the data, in general, the geriatric depression scale, participants commented that items were short and clear. However, yes, no were not sufficient response options for many. Actually, 20 subjects commented at some point that they needed, that it was not a yes-no question. 67% of the subjects who suggested adding options like sometimes or most of the times, it depends. For this same scale, potentially confusing items were: do you think that most people are better off than you are? And many participants asked afterwards, they really don't understand what we're asking about. What does the question ask? Is it financial or is it with health or in general? So that was not clear. And an example of an item needing more response options is: are you in good spirits most of the time? Which you would need no special answer, right? Are you
a vodka?
We could add that, right? So several of these items were considered long and confusing. For example, items that started with "does your health limit you in doing all these activities" were responded "not at all" or "very little" by some people who commented they cannot do these activities at all or very seldom. So they forgot the beginning of the item that was asking really whether your health is affecting you, not whether you're doing them or no. An example is: does your health now limit you in doing moderate work around the house like vacuuming, sweeping floors, or carrying in groceries? Not at all, very little, somewhat, quite a lot, or cannot do. Moving to the promise, the physical function items that were sometimes not appropriately understood, which is relatively an easy item. Does your health now limit you in walking more than a mile? That's an easy to understand, but when I asked them afterwards what they understood, or can you give me a more or less example of a mile, but one person gave a totally off example of what a mile was. So again, we're not measuring what we think when we ask that question that is easy to understand. Another question is: are you able to go for a walk of at least 15 minutes? And one participant who said with a little difficulty afterwards in the question commented, "Yes, I can, but stopping several times to rest, I can walk 15 minutes." So obviously when this item was developed, a person who responds with a little difficulty, we weren't thinking of somebody needing to stop several times to rest. And then we had a problem with lots of these people needing physical aids or using physical aids that there is nowhere in the questionnaire where we could specify this. So this is another important feature that was not included. For example, are you able to run errands and shop? One person who responded with a little difficulty afterwards in the interview commented, with help of a walker and a little basket and buying just one or two things, sure, I can go shopping for groceries with a little difficulty, but I can do it. But clearly with a little difficulty was not meant to be understood like that. So, in conclusion, minority elderly may not interpret these items in these two surveys in the way they were intended and developed. Surveys need to be developed ensuring that populations can read and understand all items. And acknowledgements, I want to acknowledge La Capra Center for facilitating reaching out to all these participants. Loretta Jones, Jose Calderon with the vodka, Ron Hayes. And our grant support. That's it. Short. Questions, comments?
So the physical function, one of the last things you said was about the AIDS, and all physical function scales, almost all of them, are like the promise. And if they don't take into account some sort of physical AIDS. So it's a common problem, first of all, but then, as you know, PROMIS has a version that lets people incorporate physical aids, at least to some extent. Another version of physical functions, yeah. But you might want to comment on that. But also, what would you do, though, in terms of changing the wording of items? What are some ideas that would make it so that you could allow people to at least know whether they should include them or not? Or what would you change?
First, with regard to your first comment, there is a short form for physical aid, but it's primarily for mobility and walking. And the people that I'm interviewing, most of them have some sort of aid in their homes, in their bathrooms especially, in the showers, in the bathroom, raised toilets, bars in the house, bars in the hallways. And that, I don't think there is a short form that would allow for that.
So, I'm just saying that they tried to address it.
Right.
So it's Dagmar Ottman. But, I mean, I think, isn't there a change in the item stem?
It's simpler. It's clearer.
Oh,
it's
also,
shorter. Yes.
I think it refers to AIDS sometimes. I haven't looked at it in a long time. But I'm just trying to get at, what would you do, because this is a tough problem, what might you do to address it?
I haven't been told that any of them asked about AIDS at all?
AIDS? Oh, physical AIDS? No. No. I have it as a... Right. It doesn't... They don't ask any.
Well, that might be... Is that one solution? You could ask up front, do you use... I don't know how
which
to word it. And then somehow give them instructions that tell them whether they're included or not. Or I'm just trying to figure out, what would you do?
Well, in the new study, I am getting that information as important sociodemographics to see what their level of functioning is before, so that we have that information to see when they respond, right?
Yeah, now that you use that, then...
Now the questions, if they use it, then we need to add something in the questionnaire so that it would go in the data, right?
Yeah, well, we want to know that they use it, but then when they get to these questions, are you going to change the instructions to say something? I mean, this is a difficult problem, so I'm trying to think of what are potential solutions. You know, if you change the instructions to say, if you use AIDS, then, you know, include that in your answer, or if you... I'm not sure what the exact solution is to this problem.
So, I am wondering, in terms of, you know, some of the elders in the underrepresented groups, if it could be a general sort of... question that could be addressed up front so that we don't remind them of what their constraints are, because I think that might also put the respondent in a certain sort of mind state to answer these questions. Because I was reflecting on the comments, the added comments. It's like yes, I can walk for 15 minutes. I might have to take 30 minutes worth of break, but I can walk. So that makes me feel a little right. more empowered to continue my functionality. So I
think that
sometimes it's one of the resilient or coping mechanisms that populations of color use to say, I can do this. I just...
And that definitely is, definitely you see it almost with everybody, that they think that you're like somehow testing. I repeat it again and again that I'm trying to just see if they understand that, what are they understanding with this question. But they always think that you're like, of course I can do it. Yes, I can do it. And then you realize these problems.
Right.
I don't know if there
could be a way to just globally address that, as I mentioned, up front, as opposed to the instructions change to where you're kind of reminding them of what you know their concerns are, particularly around the SF36 question. Right? It's like, well, maybe you didn't hear the test then, but maybe I do now.
Yeah. And maybe it could be dealt with response options, giving a response option alternatives with that I can do it, but with a walker, with...
Yeah, that might be one of the, I mean, I don't know how you actually fit it in. Would you have that as a separate choice, or
because
people who use AIDS, would you ask them two versions of the question, or have a...
Right, but then all these questions of... All these questions, does your health limit you in moderate work or hard work? Most of the people I'm interviewing now, they don't do any of that. So unless we change the example, what is hard to them means something totally different. These questions really are yielding very, very little information. Right? So if we would change, adapt the examples, and then adapt some of the... I don't know, I'm thinking.
I mean, there are a lot of problems you're identifying, so I'm not saying that'll solve it. That
just right, I'm just thinking.
One issue. Because, SF36 was mentioned, there is an example there of a physical function. There are 10 questions, and 5 of them refer to climbing or walking, and people who are disabled, some disabled people, don't even want to answer the questions, because they say they're not appropriate. Why are you asking about climbing or walking, and I'm in a wheelchair?
Right.
So they'll just refuse not to answer it, and they want totally different questions. So no matter what you're going to do there, you're not going to get them to answer. You know, you could modify the question, but walking and climbing for them is not relevant. So that's
what happens with some of these, right?
How about with questions that have and, you know, I have a problem with that, because I think we should be or. Like the last one you had on?
Here you have one, lifting heavy objects. Right? No. All of these are, they go blank. People don't.
The last one, the last question. Something about shopping and. Shopping.
Here, with a little basket.
Parents and shopping.
Here are the questions.
And shop. At the same time?
Here are the questions.
Or can you do chores or shop? No, I could. Oh, run errands. Can you run errands and shop? Yeah, I can do that at the same time. As opposed to, can you do this or that?
What are we trying to measure with this question? But your questionnaire, and just when you were doing the example, I was thinking the same thing, because look at what she's saying. She's talking about shopping, right? She's not talking about errands. So I thought she focused on just shopping. She didn't. So, you know, I don't know what she was thinking, but I don't know if errands was included or not.
I mean, are you able to run errands? What's running an errand? Are you able to do errands? We say run errands, but now I'm thinking about translating that to another language. Again, we're using words that are global, or terms that are global, that may be difficult to translate. But when I see that wrong, I think of doing both.
Right, but the first point is, double barreled, and sometimes you
right.
do one and not the other. And what are people focusing on? It's supposed to be, I think, you know, kind of similar kind of activities, so that they kind of, the reason the ends there is that you could treat them as, you know, just examples, but that doesn't necessarily mean
but it doesn't work, especially with...
Yeah, the ends in shocking could be quite different.
Plus, if you're doing physical function with a whole adult population of this country and you get an 18-year-old guy or anybody here, the run errands and shop means totally different things, right?
You know, at the end of the day, we were wondering, are these appropriate for the aging populations? And even though they read easy, what, you know, Sylvia has found, and what we've discussed, is that though they read easily, they may still not be valid. Just because you can read it,
right,
understand what it says, it may not be valid for you. And that's one of the things we're grappling with in this, you know, the difference between
well, if we could,
its validity for you and the readability issue, which is important.
Right, and if we could combine your work with simplifying language. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the translations that you asked for. So if we could combine that with this work, we would get items that are more specific and usable for this population, mm-hmm. right?
The yes, no, limiting, I mean, with it. What you found is that it's
yes.
But isn't it limited to like 50%? I didn't really know if it's yes or no, and I just get home. I've done that on exams, and I run out of time. I pick, you know, A, B, or C, I have to A, and I just pass it in. And you know, how valid is that? Yes or no? Yes?
Well, I think that's what she's finding, too, is that some people are saying it's not enough, because it's not a yes no issue. It's,
well, look at that question. You know, that's a yes or no question. But you're giving options that are not yes or no.
Or a way it's worded, yeah.
Yeah, but worded, but all...
So I think this one has some comeback, in my opinion, around testing different domains. So I, similar to the question about how do you compare to others, and it's like, well, on health, financially, this one, you running errands and shopping could be interpreted many ways, and it is indicative of different skills or abilities. So I could say, well, yes, it could run errands in the shop as long as I don't have to try on clothes because I need somebody to help me. So I can do grocery, I can go clothes shopping. Or I don't know, with the right transportation, I could.
I'm going right shopping.
So for you guys who speak Spanish, that one of the, do you feel downhearted and blue? Se siente usted a menudo triste, which is sad, really.
Sad, yeah.
Sad. Why are they complicated? Are you often sad? Right? Yeah.
Which doesn't touch on depression at all, just sad.
Right. And then again, the question is not only sometimes, but depends on the day or depends on the times of the day. Mm-hmm. You have. So how do we, if we would want to move forward to develop a short form to be used by this population, how would we go about that? We would have to adapt one of the short forms.
Well, what is that? One of the advantages of well, promise would be a lot easier. The geriatric depression scale is like set in stone. But,
yeah.
You know, when we could talk about promise, so is why would that be easier? To add items, for example.
So we could add some and adapt some? For example, all of these that are, can you do?
Yeah, but why can you do that? But you couldn't do it necessarily with the geriatric scale.
Right.
Because some of the things you already said are implicit, right? What does promise allow you to do at least from the way it was developed?
Well, the CAP, right? The computer assisted. So it would make it easier if we add items just where they would fall into that category and be responding to those, right?
Well, yeah, but it's also the IRT. So you could calibrate any new item with the existing items. But you don't, any subset of existing items are already calibrated. If you think those items are good, pick the good items from Promise.
Uh-huh.
And then administer any items you want if you think are better
mm-hmm.
and a sample, and then you can
calibrate
the new calibrations on the same metric. So the new items will now be, you know, you'll see if they fit together with the physical function scale. And then you'll have any, you know, you can estimate that same physical function scale score using the items if you want.
Right. The problem is that a lot of these people are not going to do use CAT, right? They're not going to use.
Well, you can come up with a short form too. That has some of your new, you have to have some of the existing items, but you can have the ones you like more too in there, because you could then estimate the scale score for problems.
Right.
And presumably do a better job of measuring physical function because you've corrected some problems to measure.
That's the idea, right? Moving forward.
These are national surveys, and I sometimes wonder who wrote it. Really, Eli was grappling with that, and why we actually have gone another direction in developing very easily surveys, actually translating from English to English.
As yeah.
Well. Yeah, it's good. Isn't that
true?
And this certainly can use modification, I think, you can license.
So, Sylvia, could you say anything about cognitive interviews in general? Like, one issue is people talk about false positives. So, you want to listen, you know, you listen to everything everyone tells you. I think in the paper that you did, you had some examples of where people will say something, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's right.
Like
the example of they wanted more than yes, no. And then they might actually suggest what they want, but what they suggest is not necessarily.
Because some of the questions that have frequently, do you frequently, and then they say, well, it's they're taking it as a yes-no question. But if you respond sometimes to frequently, it makes it, right? It's confusing.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Right?
I never always did something. It's like
exactly.
These compound.
Exactly. Yeah. So that would not really work. We would have to take away the frequently and say, do you do this?
Yes. Like a scale is for some of these questions is something, how often, like numbers, I don't know if that helps anything. Instead of to clarify, like,
yes, no, yes, no,
how often, yes, no, sometimes, maybe.
Yeah. But then we have your issue with a lot of these people don't really know how to respond to scales, right? I mean, all your formatting.
Like a number line, like visually.
Yeah.
Left to right. And some cultures, left to right is not the same. It's
nothing.
Yeah. Well, you're asking, how do we include data that we get from?
Well, I was just talking about the cognitive area process in general. And, you know, you get a lot of good data, but sometimes you get things from people that you really can't implement, right? Because sometimes they'll say some crazy things, and that's fine. It's just, you can get consistent feedback about a problem, and you're probably...
Well, that's the way I wrote this paper, that I said every comment that had been repeated at least 5 times. And,
yeah,
and with a yes, no...
So you set that as your benchmark?
Yes, yeah. And by person, not by question, because some people gave the same comment for multiple questions.
Right.
So that counted as one person.
And that's also been reported. People have used that benchmark before.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in doing qualitative research is it's easy to use what you want to use for your report. You want to use this or not that. But it's a good idea to look for consensus. And so what I do when I report qualitative data, I see what is the consensus, say, across focus groups? What is the consensus across the groups? That and the teaching is that after the fourth group, you're likely to hear things over and over and over, so you don't need to do more than 3 or 4 groups. I've seen people do 10 focus groups for a while. If you have Latinos, you tend to get, if you put your groups together where they're homogenous in gender, in the race, ethnicity, then you'll get similar responses. It's about 40 good. But what I do is I look for what's the consensus, and then there are 2 things. One is predetermined codes. You have these predetermined ideas you're interested in, and the things that emerge that you weren't looking for. So looking at predetermined themes and emergent themes is also important. And you'll find, like she did in her study, that a lot of the emerging themes, there was in the group study. I wasn't asking about this, but they're saying we need more than yes or no. And that's an emerging thing. And that's important to me. Even if it's not a consensus, emergent themes are important because then you can use them in the future as a predetermined thing and then focus on and probe it and see if it's actually worth reporting. But I report emergent themes, predetermined themes, and I look for consensus across the cognitive interviews and across focus groups. And that's the way to report it. You might read a lot of qualitative reports that really don't give you that. They're just going on and on and on what people said. And there's no
synthesis.
I can't get a sense of what really happened and what people are really thinking. And it's hard. And the other thing about qualitative research is, and this gets me, I sat at an NIDDK review panel some years back, and I was secondary reviewer for this one, chess from Iowa. Mm-hmm. And what does chess stand for? It's a health literacy program. And so now they were trying it in Chicago. They tested it in Iowa qualitatively. Now they're going to be testing this. What it is you're going to give computers and internet access to Mexican immigrants in Chicago and see if that improves their literacy, health literacy. And the first thing they were going to do was qualitative assessment. What did people think about using the computer for surveys to learn? And this investigator wrote a great proposal, but this much about the qualitative aspect. Okay, and that was what everything hinged on. So I said, I have a problem with this. He's not telling us how he's doing the qualitative research, how he's going to extract the data, how he's going to report the data, analyze and report it. You know what the chair told me? Well, he's a very respected investigator. I think he could handle that. No, seriously. So I scored it. I scored it low. And then the chief of that section got back to me because by the rules, we have to get back to outliers. So I was denied by the rules. Yes and yes. Yes, yes, yes. And so they got back to me, and I said, I'll review it. As the first review if you want, and I did it. And I didn't second guess myself, but I started saying, well, Joe, maybe you better look at it a little more carefully. And I did it, and I gave it the same, and he got funded anyway. So more and more, though, you're seeing qualitative research developing importance in research. Everybody now is using focus groups. But how many people are trained in focus groups? But they just do them and report them on, and that drives me crazy. And it's the way it dilutes the importance. You can just write anything you want right now. I did 12 focus groups, and nobody knows whether you did them or not. And this guy, come on, you only did two, come on. But anyway, that qualitative research is important, and you can see that, Sylvia's interviews, I liked a lot when she got the yes and no is not good enough. I need to, I wonder, was it the Latinos or the African Americans that mostly said that? Because Latinos, we like to talk a lot. And I'm not saying sí. I want to say sí, pero tú sabes que esto y esto y esto.
What about not all of us? But the average is perfect.
Go home to order.
So I was curious about that. So
but it's interesting that the question about the running a mile, that's a really easy question. And still it created a lot of problems. It didn't create problems. I realized that people didn't know what it meant, really.
They don't know what a mile is.
Exactly. Yeah. So they responded.
Right. So when you said that, I was wondering the kind of mistakes they're making in that case, does it matter? I don't know, but I'm just saying, was it like, they don't know what a mile is, but they still know it's a long way.
That's interesting.
Right? So I don't know what your example is, so I don't even know what you're saying. I mean, I can easily see people don't really know what a mile is, but they know it's enough to really answer the question.
I think that was way off.
Well, one of them said, I still remember one of these centers, no, from here to the corner. It was walking out the building to the corner,
Way off.
How many people here can run a mile?
One.
All right.
What's
the mile? What's up? That's most people.
How far is a mile? Give me all day, the one person said.
Why don't we talk about hiking?
Well, actually, there's apps now that built, you know, Map My Walk.
Yeah.
My wife and I were going on a walk, and we learned it's a lot better than that.
See, he would be responding off also.
You're looking to go, that's only a third of a mile.
Right.
20 New York City blocks
right.
is a mile.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, you need a metric. Mm-hmm. When you give that quiz or that survey in New York, you can use that example. You're giving these in Los
well,
Angeles.
Exactly.
You could say, can you
listen
to one? I'm
glad you tailor it to the geography. That's a lot of work.
Well, that comes as suggestions often.
And you got to ask whether you're running north and south in Manhattan, because if you're running north and south, those are the short blocks.
Right.
Some of these avenue blocks, if the streets are going north and south, avenues go east west. Some of those avenues are like,
it's a number of streets.
Or, right. Man, they're long. And they're like five blocks on the street side. So that's really an important point.
But that exactly. Your example is given by a lot of people.
Yeah.
That the question should ask about blocks,
like,
not miles.
Where do you get these in Los Angeles? What do you use in Los Angeles?
No, but when I ask what would be an easier way to ask, the word blocks comes a lot as a suggestion that we should ask about how many blocks.
Bus stops.
Yeah, exactly.
Take note that a lot of this has to do with grammar. And we're reporting something on that we call grammatic parsing, in terms of simplifying facts. And parsing is an exercise that was used in the 19th century to teach grammar, where people go to a sentence, students, and they break down the sentence into its component parts, and then sort of describe what each part meant, and that's how they learn grammar. So we're looking right now, working on doing a paper that describes that in how communication, but it comes down to grammar. Look at the grammar here. I mean, if I read something and, do chores or errands and, is that correct grammar? And then giving me not yes, no, but then is that grammatically correct? Doesn't have to be, because I agree with stating questions or even just making statements and not using yes, no, but giving choices, because it's implicit. You can think about it. Are you able to run errands? It's implicit you're asking about the difficulty when you see the response option, but it is an issue of grammar in a lot of this, and why it makes it difficult.
Yeah.
So, Sylvia, you had said in the beginning that you did 30, and that would be enough, basically, with saturation. And you said something related to how many focus groups, but I was looking back to a chapter on cognitive interviewing. This is another example of where people really don't know, how many you need. It's never one number, but they have a lot of difficulty with it. The book said, and Thomas, I think it was like every item had to get at least five cognitive interviews. So that was kind of a minimum. So some people have used that in other studies just because someone else did it. But this book sort of reinforced the idea of at least five. Varies, depending on the application, 5 to 30 or something, but sites like some studies use like 150 cognitive interviews. It just depends on really resources a lot of times. You can be just wasting your time. But it's not
and
totally clear.
I've always felt that five sounds small to me.
Well, it's a minimum. But I mean, there's also these, and FDA has a thing now where you kind of have like a grid you fill out. So you say, interview number one, what was new that came up? What did they say?
Oh, that's cool.
Then you get to the next interview. Did they say the same thing or different things? And at some point, if you say that we're not getting any new information,
then you stop.
Yeah. But the thing is, you might have a couple people down here and you don't hear new stuff. Well, if you went to some other people, maybe you would. So you never really know. It's just that you kind of asymptote at some point.
And
you didn't have diverse enough cognitive participants, you may quickly asking, but like you said, homogeneous group, well, that may be fine, but then you need to represent other groups.
But that was also a problem we had with a study we're doing now with what do we use as a control. We want to include a control, which we did not have here. So what is the control? People from other ethnicity or people with higher education, lower education, or... It's a tricky question, right? And we're doing... whites and with higher levels of education and lower levels of education. Mm-hmm. But it's tricky to know who you use as control to see if these results would be for everybody who's over 65 or...
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always challenged by the analysis of qualitative behavior. I've used the ASTI software. And it is cool because you can import stuff and then you can identify themes and it'll help you look for something that's common or similar to it and develop nodes. And then you connect nodes. And so you can print it out, make tables. So that's useful for that. What I like to do is, if I do a big project, if I'm doing a small project, like a project, I'll do it manually. But if it's a lot, just import it, it makes it a lot easier. And then you import mixed methods, qualitative analysis, in that form. You computerize that manually, and I think that carries a lot more weight. But it's okay if you want to do the other.
So do you have a minimum number for to use Atlas VI? Is there a minimum number for that?
Yeah, there is one person.
You know, we should revisit that and maybe do some presentations on the use of computer.
That would be good for a future
project. Yeah. Yeah. I have some presentations.
That would be great.
For a future talk here?
Yeah.
Oh, that must be That would be great.
The only trouble is that you can't do it in an hour, in the intro.
I was going to say, it's super
but you really need to spend a day, like morning, maybe one or two mornings, just to really get and how to use it. And I mean, we took back in a few years ago, we invited Richard Kruger, who was a Madison Avenue guru in marketing and using focus groups and marketing things. What do you think of this label? What do you think of it? And this is what they do. They pay people $100 to sit down and tell them they like the label. And they have the money to do this. So we invited him down. I spoke to him on the phone and invited him to the room. To teach us how to do focus groups and apply it to health services. And he was very excited. He came in 1998. He came down. We did 2 days with him, full days. And then we invited people the next year to do an advanced Atlas TI workshop. And then the following year, we brought another person to do a more comprehensive. So it started with 2 days, full days with Richard Kruger. And then we went on and did more and more and more. So it's not easy.
Well, Atlas TI is very time consuming, right?
Yeah. They have UCLA AIDS Institute would do that a few times. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've done it lately, but Dale Wyatt kind of organized 2 days of Atlas TI.
It's more believable when you use the software. I mean, that for most, you're submitting a grant, you're submitting a paper. You think about it. If you're reviewing it and somebody did like computerized software and somebody did it manually, who do we tend to believe? Come on. Especially you young ones who grew up, man, with all this media and all this computer. I didn't know where a computer was from 1991.
I think with Atlas TI, you could share your code with Matthew.
That's what I want to see, like,
what are the categories, what are the
right.
properties,
what are the
properties,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. And the reporting is super nice and thorough and yes.
And you've had good experience in the GI project.
You volunteered to do that.
Alrighty. Any questions?
Well,
one final thing is Victor mentioned traces. You mentioned traces. You know that there actually is the Dartmouth Co-op charts. Well, I don't know how to work in every item, that's the trouble, but Dartmouth Co-op. They use words and pictures, so like assessing the promise kind of thing. So
right.
And they have kind of like a happy, smiling face is the best, and a real sad face is the lowest. And you know, they use that picture very successfully. But people then say, "Well, does that affect the response then?" You know, so they did one study where they randomized not having the pictures and just having the words.
Yeah.
And that one study was a small study.
I still like pictures, so, you know,
the only people we engage is this cast item that asks you to rate the provider, right? From zero being the worst to 10 being the best.
And I always have a problem with that. I say put up a thumbs up and a thumbs down.
What about a big margin?
In between, just pick it.
The best possible. Well, put it in the caption
version. 2 likes.
Right.
So, why don't you do that in the caption version?